morning. So a few thank yous are in order. As you can tell, my voice is at not its normal melodious sound, but is way less squeaky than it was yesterday. And I would like to thank Bethany for being able to step in and cover so much of the service on short notice. This morning's sermon is actually a question box sermon based on some questions that folks from the congregation were asked to submit and did submit. And I found that there was a bit of a theme in them, which is really wonderful, and perhaps you will hear the theme as well. The first question I got was belief systems. Why are they universal? What are some features of a good belief system? So first of all, I would like to say that it is absolutely wonderful that you all have such confidence in me that you think I could answer that question in anything less than a PhD dissertation. This question is open to some interpretation. I am interpreting it as meaning, why is it universal for humans to have belief systems? Not that any one particular belief system is universal. Here is my answer, and it's a little bit of a participatory one. I want you to close your eyes if you're comfortable, center yourself, and I want you to try to imagine something. Remember the first time in your life you experienced something larger than yourself. Maybe you were a child outside at night looking up at the night sky, or perhaps at a sunset or the vastness of nature. Perhaps it was snuggled up to your favorite pet, hearing their breath and feeling their heartbeat. Perhaps it was listening to music or a poem. Or maybe it was the first time you looked into the eyes of a baby. Remember how you felt? I think that is why, in most cultures and with most humans, there is some kind of belief system, some kind of faith system. Our experience tells us that we are not the pinnacle of creation. There is something beyond us. And whenever you want, you can come back into this room or stay in that place where there is something larger than yourself. So what is the feature of a good belief system? Humility. It is that simple and that complex. And if I were to answer this question any more deeply, I would indeed be beginning my PhD dissertation, which I vowed to my husband I would never start. I then received several questions which I will group all together. How would you describe your Christian faith? I guess I'm saying, what do you personally believe, and how does that influence the way you minister our church? And a sort of follow-up to that is, what's a spiritual practice that you're happy you started or learned about as a child, or wish you had started or learned about as a child? I'm going to answer these questions all together, but in a bit of a roundabout way, so hang in there with me. First, I'd like to say that I am impressed that these questions that came through were about belief systems and spirituality. I think not only do you want to know more about me, your minister, but you also want to know more about faith or beliefs. And that's good, because that's the business I am in. On the cover of your order of service is a question mark and a comma. I chose these two carefully. In answer, how do I describe my Christian faith? Well, most of you know that I am both a Unitarian Universalist minister and a United Church of Christ, UCC minister. I was ordained first in the UCC denomination, and so I bring a deep set of roots in the Christian faith. It may surprise you that as a UCC minister and a Christian, I can say that Jesus Christ is my Lord and Savior, albeit my understanding of that is pretty liberal. And some of my UCC colleagues wonder about my solidness in my faith. The UCC has as its branding symbol a comma. Never put a period where God has put a comma is their slogan. Meaning revelation is ongoing and God is still speaking, and more importantly, we should still be listening. The question mark is not an official UU symbol, but it really should be, don't you think? I always wanted to get a stole with a comma on one side and a question mark on the other. We are the people of questions, seekers most if not all of us. So here I am, an ordained Christian minister working in a UUA congregation with strong Universalist roots. It begs the question, what are my beliefs and how do they influence my ministry here? My spiritual journey has been a Christian one, and yet it has been uniquely quirky all the same. And what church I have attended has had quite an impact on my journey, but so too does where I start. My father was Roman Catholic. My mother was originally a Congregationalist and then became a United Church of Christ member, which parenthetically I will say I never knew until I joined the United Church of Christ, because she belonged to the Orinda Community Church, which if you are a Catholic, sounds like a civic center. But she refused to convert. The Catholic Church being what it is demanded that my mother allow my father to raise the children Catholic, and so he did. So it sounds straightforward enough, but there are some interesting implications of this. First, my mother taught me in a very strong way, never abdicate your faith, even though she was not the one who was taking me to church. And by golly, she ate bacon every Friday. Never abdicate your faith. And my father taught me that tolerance is way more important than being right. Parenthetically, this may be the best piece of marital advice I have ever received. He also taught me that if you believe in something, in this case, the Catholic faith, then you best work at it. And work he did. He took 3 children to church every Sunday and on holy days too, all by himself. And there was no religious education program to break it up for him. Talk about intergenerational worship. I did learn some things about church that have stuck with me all these years. One of my earliest memories is that church was a place where you could crawl up into Dad's lap, play with his thumbs, and take a nap. It was a place of warmth and acceptance. And I had a twin brother. It was also a very fun place. My brother and I figured out that when people are kneeling with their eyes closed, nobody is looking. We used to see how many pews we could crawl under before anybody noticed we were gone. 3. Can you imagine being the parent who had to go retrieve your 2 children from under the pews? I learned that church is a place of change and exploration. I trained for my first communion exactly around Vatican II because I remember training at the altar rail and then having to retrain for receiving the communion into our hands. I went to the Catholic school that was attached to my parish. I received a very good education from a very good set of nuns, many of whom ended up being happily or unhappily married. And I remember the principal at one point talking to me and telling me that it was good to question one's faith because it would make one's faith stronger. And honestly, I thought that all Catholics were taught that. Yes, I know, I've learned differently since. And I feel blessed that I actually did receive that Catholic training and upbringing. It was kind and gentle and tolerant, and it has helped shape me who I am. And in that, I learned that church is about community. When I was in high school, I was very involved in my parish's youth group. I did everything. I taught Sunday school. I participated in a Bible study group. I worked with the social outreach committee. I worked on a retreat program that we had. Without community, I learned faith is theoretical. I remember my childhood being filled with the mystery and movement and art of liturgy. Honestly, I looked forward going to church, to service, but then again, spinach was my favorite vegetable. I learned to appreciate the mystery, to dance with it, and to let it be. Paradox means you don't have to have the answer. My journey, strangely enough, also landed me in the English class of Mr. Reeves, who was an English teacher in my high school, and besides teaching things like standard freshman English, also taught mass media and the Bible as literature. He, more than any other teacher I had, got me started thinking critically and not reactively. I learned a lot about social activism from him. His mass media was a place where he could model for students how to engage the system and how to question it. This was in the days, obviously, before the internet. And in order to stay on top of groups, to understand what they were doing, groups that he did not agree with, he had the interesting habit of subscribing to their publications, even if they were white supremacists. He would always give himself a different middle initial so he knew where it came from, and he would always send in like $5 or less because he figured they would pay more on postage, sending him more material. He was Quaker. I learned about the Quakers from him. His respect for the silent meeting and for silence in general was something I understood. It is easy to look at a Catholic Mass from the outside and say that it is about entertainment and distraction, all that singing and the prayers and the up and the down and the incense. But at its center, it is an engagement with the holy through the use of our senses. And at the center of the Quaker meeting is an engagement with the holy through the denial of our senses. For both, at their center, is not an educational process, not an engagement of the mind, but an engagement of the soul. He spoke fondly of his alma mater, Haverford College, and I decided I needed to head east. Haverford was not accepting women at that time, and so I went to Bryn Mawr, its sister college, instead. I thought six of one, half a dozen of the other. I ended up transferring to Haverford once it went co-ed. The feminism of Bryn Mawr at that time was more militant than I was interested in. And I learned something in that. I became aware that sometimes when two groups or people are disagreeing, it devolves into a shouting match, even if voices are not raised. Opposing sides are more interested in making sure they are heard than in listening. It may look like a dialogue, but it's really only two monologues taking turns. In some ways, by being both a United Church of Christ and a Unitarian Universalist minister, I have become neither fish nor fowl. It is a theme that wins its way through my life. Being a Haverford student with a major at Bryn Mawr, I was neither fish nor fowl. It is harder for people to peg you and categorize you when you are neither fish nor fowl. It is not always an easy place to be because sometimes it is nice to say, I am this and not that. It can also be a lonely place because it is comfortable to gather like folk around you, and it is hard to gather with like-minded people when you are neither fish nor fowl. Although something tells me in my experience in the Unitarian Universalist world that there are more neither fish nor fowl people here than in any other place. I am also trained as a pastoral counselor, which is less about preaching and much more about prepping. The world we live in now is in some profound ways broken, or at least it breaks people. And in their brokenness, it is near impossible for them to see or feel or understand that mystery that is greater than them and that some call God. For them, their world has become limited by grief, by pain, by guilt, loneliness. As a pastoral counselor, it is my privilege to be able to sit with people and be a presence of care and listening and perhaps point the way to healing. I help prep them to be open to the mystery. So how is it I got here? These tidbits of my life are interesting, but they do not tell the whole story. I feel that I am here at first because, like you, I am on a journey. I am unabashedly Christian and happy to talk about my faith. I love my tradition, but I believe it does not go far enough, and the Christian faith has some really big limitations. A friend of mine, a UCC minister, said this to me once. As a faith, Christianity is never at its best when it is in charge. And it is in charge all too often. So here I am at a place where my faith tradition is not in charge. And I am comfortable there. And I believe that these days, theological debate within the Christian community has been completely co-opted by the political debate. This debate has become completely divisive in our country. It is all either or thinking, two sides, simply yelling at each other. And I want to be in a place where that does not happen as much. Again, I find myself in a place of being neither fish nor fowl. In this way, I can work outside of people's categories and work out of faith values that are at the center of my faith. And they are acceptance, forgiveness, healing, a second chance. Those are really the core pieces of my faith. What I have learned in a Unitarian Universalist world is to take those Christian concepts and break them down into words that are not Christian, because it makes them more understandable, not only to myself, but to other people. The second part of this question is about, that people gave me, was about my spiritual practice. My perfectionism, honed at my mother's knee and encouraged by my Catholic upbringing, leads me to a place of anxiety that tells me the questioner is really looking for my saintliness. So first, let me tell you I'm not a saint. And second, let me tell you that much of my spiritual practice over the decades has been exactly focused on accepting and celebrating the fact that I am not saintly. I do not meditate every day without fail. I struggle with regular practice. There are things to be done and children to be taken care of, and this weird dog we adopted is always interrupting me. I struggle with quieting my own voice so I can listen better. I struggle with not letting the noise of this world overtake me. That being said, the spiritual practice I learned as a child that I still value is prayer. When I was a child, I was taught a very limited version of prayer, a kind of talking to God. As I have lived my life and learned some things, I have learned that prayer is listening. When I was a child, I had a very short list of what counted as spiritual practice. The Lord's Prayer, the Hail Mary, silent prayer, meditation, the Mass. As I have lived my life and learned some things, I have opened that up. So I ask myself this question these days: where is it that I hear or experience the divine? And here are some places where I find that. In writing. I am amazingly blessed to be tasked with writing a sermon most every Sunday of the program year, and that is probably the core of my spiritual practice. In Sunday service, If you ever see me miss the queue on picking up the offertory plates, it's because I've actually gotten lost in the service. And that is a good thing. In relationship, it takes a lot to listen to the divine in a relationship. In youth work, in service work, in nature. That may be the last place I found my spiritual practice, which probably makes me different than most Unitarian Universalists I know. But to be able to take time and see the divine in nature is important. For me, spiritual practice is less about the actual thing I do and more about making time for it. Because it is when we regularly make time, when we do the practice, that the divine will sneak in. Not every time, but if you don't make the space for it, there never will be space for it. Making time to write the sermon and then giving it the time and attention that it needs is a spiritual practice. Making time to be here on Sunday, emotionally present and putting aside the difficulties so that I can be present. Being in relationship with you all. What an honor it is to speak to any of you on your faith, on your life, on where the sacred is for you right now. It is humbling, and it is part of my practice. Making time to be in nature and to look at the beauty around me and stop and appreciate it. There is all the difference in the world in stopping and enjoying the beauty of the odd icicle and walking by it and checking it off my spiritual practice to-do list. And I make time to be in relationship with my family and making time for each of you. So it is that these are my practices. I listen, I feel gratitude, I practice love. Those are pretty good, I think. In a world without end, may this be so. As Bethany and I do our chancel switch, I'm